Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
And we're back. Are you ready? I've got a good show lined up for you today. Here it is. Let's start with some odds and end news that I like to share with you. I'm, an active reader of all the financial stuff out there, or at least as much as of it I can get my hands on. Financial Advisor Magazine, get this story. Advisor of NBA player union sent to prison for faking a contract. Say it ain't so. This is the craziest story. 73-year-old Joseph Lombardo of Gates Mills, Ohio, was sentenced after pleading guilty last year to mail fraud and conspiracy to obstruct justice, sent to jail for 18 months, trying to steal millions of dollars of NBA player union money. And he tried to cover up this whole thing with a fake contract. He even lied to a grand jury. The saddest thing of all is this guy is 73 years old. I mean, at 73, really? He's going to spend 18 months for trying to pull this scam. He's going to have 3 years of supervised release. He's got to pay a $10,000 fine and a $200 special assessment. It ought to be $200,000 as an attention getter. But it gets better. He does have to have probably some community service somewhere in this deal. So it happens, and it's crazy, but it's, you know, people and money. I'm not sure what to say. Speaking of people and money, identity theft. Yep, if you're planning a vacation this summer, be careful with your personal information. Our friends over at Legal Shield and the investigators of Kroll, they're a big investigation company with identity theft. Here's some advice. Number one, before you go, verify the legitimacy of the companies you use to book your travel plan. That's a real good idea. Do that before you book. Decide what kind of payment information you're going to carry, how many credit cards you're going to take. Maybe don't go overboard. And it's better probably to take a credit card than a debit card, because credit card, well, you can fight and dispute that. Debit, guess what? Out of your account. So it might be easier to do the credit card. Clean out your wallet or purse. Just take the things you really need to take. Don't take your Social Security card with you, please. And then the things you're going to leave, don't leave them on the counter with a note to the burglar to say, please take these while I'm gone. Put them away. Hide them. Safety deposit box. Safe. Somewhere safe. Make sure you make note of any important information in case your originals are lost or stolen. And please don't announce your travel plans to anybody you don't have to or doesn't need to know. And don't put it online on your social media sites. I ran across this one day, a lady on LinkedIn. A lady had made a point of she was traveling and she was at some conference. And she was connected to me and I discreetly wrote her back. I'm like, why don't you just put the key in the front door? Because it's not hard to find people and where they are and where they live. Put a hold on your mail and your newspapers. That's a good idea. And make sure you're ready to rock and roll. Now, while you're on your trip, do not hear. This is the same thing. Don't post photos of your location online while you're away. Hi, I'm just want to let you know I'm a great time. 5,000 miles away from my house. Don't do that. You can post all those pictures when you get back. And don't leave items with all your personal information in your car or hotel room. That's an easy one. Stay away from those Wi-Fi hotspots when you're out there on the road. Be careful with that. And then when you get back, check all your belongings. Make sure they came back with you, especially your ID. Check your payment accounts as those things come in and look for anything that looks suspicious. And then, of course, be careful when posting online reviews of any places you went. Just use initials to identify yourself. Don't let much be known about you. Don't leave a small digital footprint when it comes to this. And be stingy with your personal information when posting photos you might put on your social sites. All right, so what else do I have for you? I've got a couple of stories we've been following. Oh, this is really interesting. Financial planning, investment planning, retirement planning, inherited IRAs. If you properly structure your IRA accounts, and when you pass, they will go to your beneficiaries. It goes to your spouse. They can roll it over into their own IRA. And it becomes theirs, and they can do what they will with it. And then when the survivor dies, or if you just leave it directly to other people, children or other beneficiaries, it is called an inherited IRA. Well, that is even more significant now because of a recent ruling by the Supreme Court. These things roll over into your name. They are an inherited IRA if you're the beneficiary. They are an inherited IRA. You draw them out over your lifetime. You don't have to pay tax on them right away. But as you draw them out, you pay tax on them as income tax. But they're still an IRA. So the question that was before the court was whether or not they have the same level of bankruptcy protection as regular IRAs, which do have and are afforded protection under the law. So if you have an IRA and you get sued or you go bankrupt, they get preferential treatment. Well, guess what? According to a recent Supreme Court ruling, your inherited IRA no longer is considered a retirement account for that purpose. So that's a big deal. So it's a big deal for the people who receive these inherited IRAs that they need to recognize that it's not protected. And for people who are making their estate plans, to keep that in mind that it's not going to be protected. Now, you're the beneficiary and you receive this. You've got to take it out of your lifetime anyway. You might want to take the money out and then use that to fund. You've got to take so much out each year, you might want to turn around and use that and put it into an IRA that does qualify for that preferred treatment from with bankruptcy or creditors or whatever the case may be. So it does have a significant impact on your planning. So I thought that was an interesting story to get to. Let's see. What else do I have for you? Well, let's do this. Let's grab a break. Come back. I've got some things I've been wanting to share with you, and I think you'll find some insight in them. Stay right there.
What if in the time it takes to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? If you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? There is no cost or obligation to meet with David. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com for more information.
And we're back. So, a couple other things to get to. I've been working on a series in my column that is in the local paper and also, of course, on our website and in our app. And if you haven't checked out the app, get the app, Real Money, David Holland, get the app, and you'll be all up to date with all the stuff we've got that we're producing for you. So the series I started, a column in the paper that I've been writing, and the series is the 10 mistakes when planning for retirement. You know, in the last 17 years, I've seen a lot in having my own firm, and so I've started this new series to kind of share some of that with you. And I added it up the other day. It was pretty interesting. I figured I've rendered about 700 second opinions over the last 17 years. So that's a lot. And so over that period of time, I've seen people who said, look, I need to know what I'm doing. I'm on the right track. And people are all over the place with their money and have different ideas or different things that they're doing. And so I've looked at those things. And so I've kind of distilled down some of the common mistakes I've seen. And I can tell you sometimes it only takes a little tweak and people are good to go. And sometimes there's an overhaul that's needed. So I'm going to go through some of this with these top 10 mistakes and we'll start covering them. We'll get to some of them with this program and then I'll get to others on a future show. So the first mistake, which is going to hit real close to home for some people, is emotional attachment to investments. Well, so what does that mean? There's a saying among financial professionals. Don't take it personally now. I'm going to talk about you guys for a minute out there, you investors. But there's a saying about you in the financial circles that individual investors are really good at buying stocks, but not so good at selling them. You meaning the investor, you like to buy them, you do your research, or you get a tip, quote unquote, air quotes, tip, or you hear about a quote unquote hot stock or whatever it may be, and you buy it. But then when it comes time to sell it, you don't want to sell it if you're going to lose money. It's one thing to have a paper loss and to see, I bought it for $10 a share and it's worth $2 a share. Well, but it's not a real loss because it's just on paper, right? Well, it's nothing's worth more than what you can get for it. So, but I understand the thinking there. You certainly can wait for something to go back up before you sell it. And that's good because you don't want to sell it when it's down if it's got the potential to come back up. But It's also easy to get emotionally attached to investment if it's got some sentimental value. So if you inherited it from somebody and that was a stock that was important to them, or you work for the company, then it's a little harder. So these are some things that, you know, emotions and investing usually don't go real well together. Now, I've got a practical example that's not actually about stocks. It's about real estate. My parents have been clients of mine for a long time, and they actually, about 20 years ago, they purchased a cabin up in North Carolina where they could escape from our hot summers here in Florida, and they put a lot of sweat equity into it, and every summer they would go up and spend a couple of months, and they really enjoyed it, cooler mountain air, and they would always go, and they had friends up there, and they would work on it. It was always a work in progress, and they did this for about 20 years. Well, after that period of time, it became a little harder, of course, to go up, and you know, the 10-hour drive became a longer drive, and it was also harder to manage from afar. And of course, having three grandkids and other family and friends in town, that started to kind of keep them staying local longer. So they knew they needed to sell it and do something different, and they were at a different stage or a different point in life, but it was hard for them. They really had a hard time with it. My mom told me it broke her heart. Now, she knows it was the right thing to do, but it still wasn't, you know, it wasn't fun. They had an investment in it, but it was also, they were emotionally attached to it. They finally, you know, decided to sell it, and they're glad they did, although they do miss having it. So the right thing to do, the point of my story, the right thing to do, I'm not going to tell you it's easy or fun, but you know, you've got to make you've got to look at things and have them be the right thing or the right quote unquote investment for you at the right time. If you have real estate like my parents did, or you have a stock or mutual funds or a 401k, whatever it may be, and it has served its purpose. When you go through a transition, let's say you move into retirement, then you know what? You may have to make an adjustment, and that's okay. You know, you need to look at it objectively, and if you can't, that's where, you know, maybe getting some advice from a financial planner, or if it's more of a personal decision, you know, from somebody that you can trust. Because here's the thing: sometimes when we face a decision, we already know what we want to do, and then we'll start there, and then we'll work backwards and find some facts to support the decision we've already made. But if you ask maybe an independent planner to give you some advice, what should I do about this? They won't do that. They're going to start with where you are and walk through it logically, and that can help a lot. So be careful, be aware of getting emotionally attached. And that really brings me to a hand in hand, a second related subject, which is mistake number two: inadequate investment diversification. I see this with people who have worked for a company maybe for a long time, and or they, again, have a company that has been inherited, or whatever. Somehow people end up having a stock or another investment that they're really heavy in. So let's use the idea or the example of somebody who's worked for a company. And I've heard this more than once. And here it goes something like this, quote unquote, "I'm going to load up on the company stock because, you know, since I work there, I know what's going on." Yep, that's exactly what many now former Enron employees said to themselves back in the 1990s. They plowed everything they had into the company, and some even borrowed on their houses to buy more Enron stock. They put all their 401k money into Enron stock. They had options for buying Enron stock, every which way but loose, right? And inadequate diversification is probably one of the biggest risks investors can face. And there's not any better example than an Enron, because everybody knows the story of Enron. And just to refresh your memory, if you haven't heard about it in a while, ironically named most innovative company by Fortune magazine 6 years in a row, Enron's management lived up to the company's perennial title by orchestrating one of the largest accounting frauds in U.S. history. Now, all this unraveled in what year was it? 2001. They reported a $618 million quarterly loss, and the federal regulator stepped in and launched a formal investigation, and a stock that was trading at $90 a share inside of 15 months went from 90 bucks a share to 25 cents a share. Holy mackerel. Just devastating for investors, for mutual fund companies that were investing in Enron. And of course, those affected the most, 20,000 Enron employees not only lost their jobs, but many of them lost their homes, lost their 401ks, the money they had put into for buying extra because they knew it so well because they worked there. Remember, these are folks that knew what was going on because they worked for the company, but despite their intimate knowledge of the company, even long-term employees of the company were duped by Enron's management, just like everybody else on Wall Street. So that is the risk of inadequate diversification. Now, there's also a temptation. Let me kind of flip the coin over. There's also when people... Maybe people are trying one final big push before they retire. And Enron's just not, they're not the only example of inadequate diversification by any means. There's lots more stories. Some people, after a lifetime of hard work and accumulating, they will jeopardize everything on one final big bet. If I could just hit this one deal, if this one investment would just work out, I'll be all set. Be it a real estate deal, business investment, or some sort of all-in gambling. I've seen this happen, and I got to tell you, it's tragic. Don't you do it. Don't you do it. Now, I'm not saying you can't invest some of your money into your employer's stock or even another hot stock. Just don't let it become more than, let's say, 5% or so of your total investment. Now, I know it's hard when you work for the company. You want to look like a good, loyal soldier. At the very least, as you get closer to retirement, start backing off. And a lot of companies that offer stocks through their 401ks also give you some options on moving into other investments. So you'll want to shift your thinking from return on your investment to return of your investment. And I would be willing to bet that 20,000 former Enron employees would probably agree with me that that's a good idea. All right. So those are two of my top 10 mistakes that are made when planning retirement. We're going to grab one more quick break here. When we come back, I've got another one for you. Stay right there.
Do you know how to get the most from Social Security? Don't let a simple mistake prevent you from receiving all the benefits you've earned. David Holland recently showed a retiring couple how they could get an extra $84,000 in Social Security benefits over their expected lifetime. Wow! Don't leave your money on the table. Call Holland Financial today for your one-on-one appointment. David can do a free analysis for you and show you the optimal age to start drawing Social Security and filing techniques to maximize your benefits. There is no cost or obligation. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Hey, welcome back. So, you know, don't get me wrong. People do a lot of things right. And I'm excited when I have somebody come in and they've got things on the ball and they've done well. And maybe there's just some tweaking they can do, or they can make some adjustments. Or even if they've done very well, we still might want to make some adjustments to get positioned for the back nine of life for you golfers out there, to get yourself where you need to be to make the most of what you have. All right. So let's move on. I've got another mistake that I've seen made by people. And this one's important. If you're going to work with an advisor, you had better, and I hate to sound preachy, but you had better do your due diligence. And a good golf swing or a good cheerleader on the golf course does not necessarily make for a good advisor. So I'm not going to kid you. I got to be real candid here with you. Being an advisor carries a lot of responsibility, and you need to know how an advisor does business. It's not an accident. It's a choice. It's not beyond the advisor's control. Okay? All advisors choose the services they want to provide, which licenses they need or which ones they want to get, which financial credentials they're going to earn, and how they're going to get paid. None of those things just happen. Okay? They didn't build a road and all of a sudden all those things happen. So before you seek guidance from an advisor, be clear about your goals and what you need to do, and also be real clear about you want to be able to categorize and sort out advisors and compare them so you can decide which ones you want to interview and then also be able to ask some good questions. Now, conveniently for you, I've created a system for doing this. It's called the 7 Elements of How Financial Advisors Do Business, and it's in my book, How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. It's available on Amazon.com, or if you come in and meet with me and want to talk about your situation, I'll be happy to give you a free copy. But the 7 elements, why I created this is I look for this. I'm like, you know, it'd be nice if there was a book out there that a way for people to be able to categorize different advisors, because people don't understand the differences. Well, there's 7 categories. It's kind of like the 3 primary paint colors, okay, or primary colors. You've got red, blue, and yellow, right? Those are the 3 primary colors, and the absence of all colors is black. So you've got red, blue, and yellow. If I mix those together in whatever combination, I can get all the other colors. So red and blue gives me purple. Okay. So I can take these 7 elements of how a financial advisor does business, and I can create pretty much every advisor on the planet. And I saw a report the other day. There's about 1 million of them in the United States. So one for every 300 or so persons in the country. So here they are. Here are the 7 elements that you want to understand. I'll give each one to you and a little commentary on each one. Licensing and regulation. Your question should be, what licenses do you hold and how are you regulated? Number 2, what product and service capabilities do you have? Which products and services can you provide me? And equally important, what financial services are outside of your expertise? Because not every advisor knows everything about everything. Number 3, industry titles and labels. This information usually is on the advisor's business card. Ask the advisor to explain what the titles mean. The term president means nothing. What do you do? Okay, are you a financial planner? What do you do? Number 4, degree of advisor independence. Aha, that's a big one. Some advisors are restricted by their licensing or their employment as to the products and services they can offer. You want to know what that limitation is. Number 5, fiduciary status. Being a fiduciary means that for as long as the relationship exists between you and the advisor's recommendation should be suitable and be the best choice based on your situation. This is a yes or no answer. Is you is or is you ain't my fiduciary? Okay. Number 6, method of compensation. Don't be shy. How do you get paid? There's no best answer, okay? How do you get paid? And last but not least, what are your financial credentials? Tell me about which credentials you've earned and how'd you get them and all of that. So those are the big 7. And you can use those to figure out how an advisor works. And again, you can get all the details in my book, How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. But that'll get you started. All right, that's it for today's show. Be sure to join me next time.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.